Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. I have a guest coming on in a few minutes, but before she comes on, I would like to remind everybody that this Friday, September 30th, if you live in New York City, I need you to attend a very important lecture. Everybody who comes is welcome to speak. It is a town hall. It is in regard to the CDC power grab, which affects not just children, but adults as well. Very important that you show up, understand what's happening, so that we can act in concert with one another and make a difference, a preemptive difference. I just had a show about this issue, and everyone was saying how they would react. Well, we have time to preempt this power grab, and it is startling, believe me when I say. So that's going to be Friday at 8 p.m., 244 West 54th Street on the 11th floor in Studio C, Friday, September 30th, from 8 p.m. until 10. We will be taping for television as always, but not everybody who speaks is required to be televised. You know, that's up to you. So I really am looking forward to meeting everybody and to devising a plan that will preempt this godforsaken power grab by the CDC already. Now, my guest today is Lucy Brenton. She's a Libertarian candidate for the U.S. Senate in Indiana. I am thrilled to have found this remarkable lady. And she is a mother of 10 children. I discovered her in a picture. My friend Jim O'Kelly was taking a photograph with his banner and all of our banner. We have 30 states who are participating in a call for a national moratorium on vaccination now. And this lady was in the picture, and he introduced me to her, and I'm so grateful because she's quite remarkable. So let me pick up Lucy Brenton now.
Hi, Sally. This is Lucy. How are you doing?
Well, you have a million-dollar smile. You have a thousand-watt smile, I must say.
Aw, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, I looked at the picture and I thought, who's that woman with that remarkable smile? It just leaped through the photograph. Now, you have 10 unvaccinated children. Am I correct about that?
Yes, that is correct. Only two of those were born with OBs. The others were born with midwives and at home. So we've known for a long time that we weren't going to vaccinate. Would you like me to just tell my story real fast so your listeners will know where I'm coming from?
Not real fast. Take your time. I'm in no rush. We have 45 minutes.
Okay. Well,
you're the only guest. I was trying to expedite the other lady's information simply because we had so many other people on the line, you know.
Hard.
You take your time.
Thank you. That is so kind of you. Well, it all began when I was a zygote. No, really. So here's what happened to me that was a really wonderful thing. I had a mom that was really into direct sales and multi-level marketing, which meant that I got to hang out with her all the time, and she dragged me around to all of these meetings. And there were always really forward-thinking people who were always looking at, you know, the latest and greatest thing that was coming along, and they weren't afraid to talk about it. And so one of her business partners ended up being a really nice gal who's still alive today. She's like 91. Her name is Jan Stetna. Now, Jan Stetna is the mom of four very famous racing cyclists, as in bicycle racing. And so I was racing bicycles when I was 13. So for my mom to go into business with Jan was like meeting royalty. These are people I read about in books. So when Jan talked, I really listened. I respected her. You know, she wasn't my mom, so I could listen to her. And she gave me access to her library. Now, this woman is a PhD. And so when she gave me access to her library, the very first book I read was called Vaccination, the Silent Killer by Ida Onaroff. This was back in 1984, 1985, around then. And I'll tell you what, I learned about the vaccine scam early. The last vaccine I had personally was when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and haven't had one since. and have managed to get my children even through, you know, hospital births without having a single vaccine, which, you know, that can be a little bit stressful because they operating from a very faith-based system where the faith is not based on fact, very hard to convince medical personnel of their errors because they're so good at reading and regurgitating and then getting rewarded for repeating the lies. So it's an uphill battle against that system, but I've got a pretty strong personality, and I'm blessed with a husband who also believes the same way I do.
My dog, Lucy, the mailman has entered the block, so I must mute myself now, and so you can continue uninterrupted.
That's okay. I'll go ahead and keep talking. So, I knew from a very early age that I wouldn't be vaccinating my own children. Now, the way that it came about with my husband, we were dating, and I was pre-law, and he was pre-med. So I would make these sweeping statements without any kind of evidence to back it up, like vaccines never saved anyone, and vaccines are a scam, and they're poison. And, of course, he being pre-med and being a biology and chemistry double major, he really thought I was nuts. But apparently I was cute enough that he stuck around. So when we were dating, he would say things like, look, you're just going to have to prove it to me. And that was probably the best thing anybody could have said because it really made me go dig. And this was in 1990. There was no Google. And so I just went down to IUPUI, which is where we both attended university, and I went to the medical library and got the peer-reviewed journals off the shelf and, you know, did some photocopying. And when I brought him back a stack of peer-reviewed articles, he started to read them. And after he got through a couple of them, he came to me and he said, the abstract is 180 degrees opposite of the data. They're lying. And I said, yep. And then he went through. He's very smart in math, much more so than I am. And he started to actually go back and look at the data sets and the extrapolations and the computations that had been done by the authors of the article. And I hadn't had statistics yet, so I didn't really know what he was doing, but it looked very convincing. And he actually showed me where they went off the rails and they started ignoring the data and manipulating the data in order to get the conclusion that they would later put in the abstract. What also disturbed him was how many studies would start out with a very large number of subjects and then end up with sometimes less than half or even just 25% of the original number of subjects in the study. So it was clear to him that people were being taken out of the study because they didn't contribute to the kind of data that they wanted to publish. So it didn't take anything but, you know, hard evidence to convince him that vaccines were a scam. And now he is even more eloquent speaking out against vaccines than I could ever hope to be. So that's kind of my story. I don't know where your mailman is yet,
the mailman is still here. But no, I'm thinking as you're speaking, and let him interrupt me. That's fine. But I'm thinking, isn't that precisely what they did with the current CDC whistleblower and the cover up of that they manipulated the number of people in the study by removing everyone who didn't have a birth certificate. So they manipulated it precisely as you're describing. I think you should send this information to Dr. Wakefield. I really do, or to Dr. Hooker, because you're just verifying what was said and how typical it is. It's important for people to know that. Anyway, So now you proved your case to your husband. And this interview is about you, but I can't help but wonder, how did his knowledge of this affect his work?
Well, he ended up, because I didn't make it to law school and he didn't make it to med school. So neither one of us ended up in the careers that we thought we would. Which is, you know, perfectly fine. I mean, when you have 10 kids, it's very difficult to finish university because, you know, you can only go, you know, a few hours here and a few hours there. So I don't think that was a great loss. One of the things that we discussed, because he did apply to med school and get accepted, he talked to his advisor, and the advisor at IUPUI was a really interesting guy who was both a doctor and a lawyer. And by the time that he had applied to med school, I mean, it was a few years later, we had 5 kids. And his advisor said, do you love your wife? And he said, yes. And do you love your kids? He said, yes. He said, then don't go to med school. He said, keep investing in real estate. You're obviously making enough money in that. He said, if you go to med school, you're likely to lose your family. He said, most of the guys do. So when it came right down to it, we just pursued other things like investing in real estate. And we have very entrepreneurial pursuits. Our family owns a credit repair company, and we help businesses get business credit. So we never took, took the medical route. He never did as a career. And, I didn't take law as a career either. But that's okay. That was not a loss to our family. That was a good thing.
Well, I have a friend who needs credit repair. So could she call
give
you?
Her my number.
She's in a different state?
Yeah, absolutely. Just,
great.
Go ahead and have her, just give her my phone number. You've got my personal number, and that's absolutely fine for her to call me. I'm not quite as passionate about credit repair as I am about vaccines because it's not a life and death issue, but it's still a corruption issue. And since it's a corruption issue, it's something that I take up the banner on.
Interesting. Well, she needs to improve her credit for her business, so that would be very helpful. So thank you.
Perfect. So that's very fortuitous. Yep. But, really what it boils down to is I just had, a great upbringing, and I've always been very skeptical of authority. That part is to the chagrin of my parents because I grew up Mormon, which is a very wonderful culture to grow up in. But if you're looking at it from, a religious perspective, it doesn't really line up exactly with the Bible. And so I ended up leaving the Mormon religion because of that. But there are some really wonderful people that are Mormon, and some of them are pro-vax, and some of them are anti-vax. And I'm always just flabbergasted at those who are pro-vax, because even after I share with people, and Mormons, evangelical Christians, Catholics, even after we share with them that babies have been aborted, specifically aborted, in order to manufacture the vaccines that are pumped into their own children, I get a glazed look, and I see them start trying to do those mental gymnastics of, well, we don't want that sacrifice to go to waste, so I don't want my kid to get measles. I'm so sorry some other baby had to die. That's what I see across their faces, and it really makes me
Oh, that's horrifying.
Isn't that what you see when you tell people?
With a woman who taught at a Catholic university, and she had 5 children, and I spent 2 hours with her, and she said at the end of the 2 hours, do I have a choice to vaccinate? I said, yes, you can get an exemption. And she said, I mean, because I want to vaccinate. And I thought that was 2 hours wasted.
You'll forget that part of your life back.
All of her children are vaccine injured. It is so sad. It is so sad.
You know what's most
disgusting
about people like that is they'll say that it was God's will. Well, it was just God's will because I needed to learn patience. This is this false humility that disgusts me, and I don't think Jesus would like it very much, but I see that sometimes in people that are looking for excuses. It's very difficult for people to own up to the mistakes that they make in life, especially when it's such a grievous error as to get your children vaccinated and then have them.
I'm one of those mistake makers, so I tell people you must forgive yourself as I have forgiven myself so that I stop vaccinating and can move forward to repairing my child's health. It's kind of adventitious to have made all the mistakes when you speak to people unlike you who came out swinging and knowing what's going on because I can, they can relate to me because I, too, have made these horrifying mistakes. Nonetheless, people have to forgive themselves. You must, and hopefully your children can forgive you. I know a very severely injured older child when she was injured with the HPV vaccine who is furious with her mother. She wants to shred her mother. And
of course,
can see where she would feel this way, but at the same token, her mother kind of, there has to be some level of forgiveness to move forward, just to exist.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because otherwise that will eat her up. There's so much there with the injury, and of course we have. I know you see this. We have the powers that think they are. I hate to call them the powers that be because I don't let them have control over me, but that the powers that try to be are trying to move Gardasil into, you know, a shot for one-year-olds because one-year-olds can't talk. When you got a 14-year-old that was, you know, that was a cheerleader doing backhand springs and backflips, and then the next week she's not, and the only thing that's really changed, nothing's changed in her diet or her environment. The only thing that happened is she got a shot. That's, you know, it's really difficult when you have children that are damaged that can talk, befores and afters.
Right. And the ones who are very active, like competitively active and
yes.
often in more than one sport, are the ones who seem to be crashing the hardest as a result of the
yeah.
HPV vaccine.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent observation.
Well,
but I know you're saying it too.
Same facts. Put that observation. I have an observation, though, because I've interviewed hundreds of vaccine-injured parents, you know, of vaccine-injured children. And I have noticed that the children who seemed ahead of their markers, of their stage developments, I mean, kind of wildly ahead intelligence-wise, they seem
mm-hmm.
to be the ones who fall to the MMR.
Really?
Yeah, because I hear stories of truly exceptional advancement intellectually or in terms of intelligence. And they, you know, when everyone else was counting to three, their child was counting backwards from 20, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And they seem to be falling hardest to the MMR. So, you know, maybe black boys are the smartest. Who knows? I'm just saying.
That's a really interesting observation. Here's what I think is really just egregious, and it's hard for me to, as someone that's been awake for basically my entire adult life. I mean, I read The Unseen Hand by A. Ralph Epperson and learned that, you know, Lincoln had put the Indiana senators in jail because we were going to go with the South. And it wasn't about slavery. It was really about the South wanting to exercise their right to leave the Union. And the North was going to do everything they could, you know, including a civil war to keep them in it. So I've known about these things, and I get so frustrated because I don't see anybody else questioning authority, and I don't see them standing up. And I talked about this with my husband for years. I'm like, honey, why in the world are these people, why don't they get it? And finally, a couple of years ago, he looked at me and he said, imagination. He said, we have imagination. We can imagine a world that's different from what we're living in, and we can actually project ourselves forward into that world. We can see consequences. He said, the people, and that allows us to look at something different and have it in contrast to what actually is. And he said, the people that believe it hook, line, and sinker, he said, notice they're the same people that watch TV. And their stories are all stories that are made up for them in television programs. Our stories are things that we make up for ourselves.
Now, do you have a no television policy in your house?
About 95%. We have the fast internet in our house, which if we turn on the cable box, it allows us, you know, to watch the sporting events, which we do about once a week. But as a general rule, no, we don't watch television. There's no value in it. I mean,
no.
I don't know about you, but there's just nothing there for me. When I'm reading, if I were to pull up my Kindle list, you would see that, you know, I'm reading things by, you know, Bob Proctor because I want to do personal development. The book that's in front of me literally right now as I'm speaking to you is called How to Be a Super Communicator for Liberty, Successfully Sharing Libertarian Ideas. So what I want to do is I want to stuff all this stuff in my head, all this knowledge. Boy, sitting down in front of the boob tube, that just really has no appeal for me at all.
Well, you have 10 children. A lot of people use it as a babysitter.
Well, YouTube videos are really good for that. You know,
yeah.
You've got to be really careful what you let your kids watch on YouTube. There are a couple of families that have video logs that I let the three-year-old watch, but I can't let her watch Doc McStuffins. I can't let her watch Daniel Tiger. I can't let her watch Elmo. Or there was another one that had Sid the Science Kid. Oh, my gosh, that's so horrible. Every single one of those children's programs that I've just mentioned talks about, you know, going in for your shots. They're conditioning them even at 2 and 3 years old. It's horrible.
Well, I just played a video of a man who it looked like he was covering something that was socially responsible. I was thrilled. It was he was covering the fact that the food that is given to the elderly by a food delivery service, an organization, is like garbage. It's like looks like garbage. It looks absolutely horrifying. So he was
really?
Saying that something has to be done. He was calling the person who paid a supplier to account, et cetera. And then at the end of it, he says, and he just threw this in from left field. I was furious. He said, I'm a taxpayer. I want the elderly fed. I want the children inoculated. I'm like, say what? Say what? And so, I've written everywhere what I had to say about that, So it's they do this all the time. They make you think that they're legitimate and concerned people. And then I've seen it happen so many times. Helen Caldicott, who fights against nuclear fallout, well, she's also a pediatrician. She's also funded by Physicians for Social Responsibility, which is a George Soros thing. She also credits the beginning of her career for Murdoch. Well, while she talks about nuclear fallout and all the dangers, she exalts vaccines 9 times in one 45-minute lecture. She exalted vaccines.
Wow. So it really makes you wonder. The internet has been so incredible because it's allowed people to share information instantaneously. And of course, the internet has come up alongside the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act coming in 1986. And then I can remember, having what we called internet back then, but it was like 1996. I had my first little 286 computer where I could actually get on the internet. And, we didn't have the kind of graphic interface that we have now, which is just so gorgeous. But we did have the ability to talk to people. And so people had started to form groups, and they started to talk to each other, and they started finding out that their stories were the same. And this is one of the things that always ticks me off is my husband is not condescending like this at all to me, but people that are in science, I'm a liberal arts major. I speak French, so that's my degree is in French. They act like people that don't have a science degree don't have enough knowledge or common sense to decide what goes into their own food and what goes into their own bodies. You don't need a science degree to know that injecting mercury into your muscles, not such a good idea. Just like I don't need a science degree to know that I don't want any dog poop sprinkled on top of my food. It's very easy.
Well, what I have fun doing is sending, I've had people say, I'm a medical doctor trained at Harvard. I said, well, then you must have a great deal of respect for Merck and GlaxoSmithKline and blah, blah, blah. And here are the inserts to all of their vaccines. So you read through that and get back to me. Oh, Harvard doctor.
That
never
heard
back.
That's too funny, because usually when they say that, I go, well, you better ask for your money back because you've got some glaring holes and gaping holes in your education. where's that refund? Let me get you that refund request form because you didn't even get basic biology. That is really hard, just to pick on Harvard. I have a friend of mine who is, and I won't name him, but he's very high up in the Gary Johnson campaign. And many of us who are pro-medical freedom were a little alarmed when Johnson did his, there's this herd immunity thing I just heard about, and wow, I didn't know it was important. I guess everybody should be vaccinated. So I got the chance on September 12th, when he was being interviewed by former Governor Mitch Daniels, to confront him. It's an open forum. You line up in the aisleways on the mics, and I asked him about vaccines. In that kind of a form, I couldn't really give much background information. The time is very limited. So I gave him what I thought would be, the very, very bullet points he would need to be able to say, yep, medical freedom. And he did. He did say, absolutely. I believe that people should have control over their own bodies, blah, blah, blah. He said, but if there was a zombie apocalypse, and of course, I don't get to, you don't get to rebut that sort of thing. You're on to the next person. But I think he was trying to be glib and trying to have a sense of humor about the whole thing, because he doesn't think a zombie apocalypse would ever happen. Therefore, there would never be any need for a, you know, government vaccines. But the glibness of it is what disturbed me. It's a very serious issue. And the person that I know that tie up in his campaign is a Harvard is somebody that I know that went to Harvard. And I just wonder if the herd immunity thing came from this person. This is a person that I know well in person and have invited. I said, hey, I got my vaxxed DVD. I got my documentary. I didn't even tell him the name of it. I got a documentary in hand. When are we getting together so you can watch this movie? Because the problem is they're all operating from outdated information. We now have a whistleblower that's admitting to the fraud. That means there's new information. So anything these people did, you know, any research they did was only due to scientific fraud. And I'm still unsure how I'm going to communicate to these people, although I'm trying, that you're operating with incomplete information. The data set that you have is not only flawed, but it's fraudulent. And therefore, you must look at the data again, because now you can look at it with the knowledge of where the fraud is, and you can make a better conclusion. But
well,
that takes a lot of work.
There's an article, two articles that I will send you. One is called
okay.
The Vaccine Hoax is Over.
Gotcha.
That's spectacular, because at the bottom of that article, they tell you to take this information and inform anyone who will ever be recruited to force vaccinate you and inform them about it. So that's actually one of the most valuable parts of that article. And another one is all vaccines are contaminated, every last one of them. And these are two mainstream papers.
Why
I choose them, but they're also the best to bring it home in terms of people's awareness. There isn't a legislator alive in New York or in the federal government who doesn't possess them.
I'm sure you made sure of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to keep Indiana relatively free because, as you know, the freedom in this issue varies state by state. And I've seen video where people in New York are trying to, you know, share their sincerely held religious belief with the school board that they don't want to vaccinate, and, you know, how they get made fun of and shut down and basically just told to shut up and get your damn vaccine. Really, really disturbs me, because it's a lack of respect for religious freedom. By the way,
what I tell parents is, when I educate them, I will conclude with this statement, because it takes it to a new level. Their eye popping tells me it takes it to a new level. When I tell them everything I think they need to know, and as expeditiously as possible, I then say to them, now if you find out what I'm telling you is true, because I'm handing them a card with many links on it, I say to them, it becomes your responsibility to educate every other parent. So I'm not just giving this information to you, but to every parent you know, and I want you to risk ridicule and save a child. And there are
risk ridicule and save a child. I love that.
Yeah.
May I adopt that?
Yeah, well, it's out there. I've been saying it for quite a while, because it's the thing people fear most is stepping out of their comfort zone and then becoming the target of, you know, what we've all received, which is dismissal and, you know, ridicule, basically. So just, you know, be that person to risk ridicule and save a child.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm immediately going to add what you just said to my little spiel. And I'm going to, with your permission, it takes about 2 minutes. I'll give you the little spiel that I give to people. Would that be okay?
Oh, please. Oh, I'd love it.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to have to actually type it out. Maybe I'll even, you know, go back over this and use it as a transcript if I communicate it well enough now. I'd studied vaccines for a really long time. And like most of us in the pro-medical choice and movement, we have a lot of different things that we know, but trying to put them together in a way that very quickly takes it to the heart of the matter, the brain damage, is really hard. And you want to communicate something to somebody quickly. It was after I watched the videos by Dr. Andrew Molden, the ones that are on executivereasoning.com, with the horrible background music that makes it so difficult to hear him. Man, I wish there was a way to edit that out. But seeing how he relates it back to the brain damage and the stroke because of his very unique education inspired me. And so I kind of came up with this just, you know, trial and error. I'm very good. I'm very friendly. So I'm very good at, you know, approaching complete strangers. I have almost no problem with that. Sometimes I feel like God holds me back, but usually I just go out into the world and say, you know, whoever I'm supposed to meet today, you know, just prompt me, you know, for those who are religious, let the Holy Spirit talk to me, you know, let inspiration flow from me or whatever, for the non-religious. So if I see a lady and I'm in the health food store section at my grocery store and she's got a baby that I can compliment her on how cute the baby is or play peekaboo with the baby or in some way engage the mom, I don't do this with men because they might think you're hitting on them if you're a woman. So I'm only engaging moms and babies. Maybe the fathers can engage other fathers. And maybe I'll compliment her, oh, what a cute handbag and what a cute baby. You know, maybe she's pregnant. Oh, when are you due? And I quickly establish rapport and just in 30 to 60 seconds try and make a friend. It's important that people like you make a friend. And now that the documentary has come out, I can look at them and open my eyes really wide in shock and say, have you heard what happened at the CDC? There's a little bit of, you know, acting involved, so it's, you know, a little bit of drama. If you heard about what happened at the CDC, what do you know what happened at the CDC? They had a whistleblower come forward, and he admitted, you can hear it in his own voice on tape, that they committed scientific fraud at the CDC, and we've got a huge problem with the MMR vaccine. And they're like, really, what? And I said, well, here, let me give you an example, because it's not just the MMR vaccine, it's all vaccines. So you know how when you go to get vaccinated, they got that vial of stuff and that hypodermic syringe? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, you know the hypodermic syringe creates a puncture wound into your muscle. What's the worst kind of wound? And I'll pause a second. Usually they'll say puncture wound, but if they don't get it within a second or so, I'll say, it's a puncture wound, right? Yeah, they nod their head. It's a puncture wound. See, here's the problem. If we eat something that's bad, you know, we can puke it out or we can poop it out. Our body has a way to eliminate it. But when you put it into a muscle, it's just like you're marinating your Thanksgiving turkey. All that liquid shoved into the muscle with no place to go. By the way, if you read those ingredients thing, they've got things like formaldehyde in those. I wouldn't put formaldehyde, you know, it's so dangerous it's only in dead people. They're putting it into your baby's muscle. You can go look it up. So, but that's not the worst thing. And I go, what's the worst thing? That you, every beat of your heart circulates all of that stuff. So now every beat of the heart is taking all of that liquid out of the muscle and circulating it throughout the bloodstream. And these tiny babies, they don't have a barrier between their blood and their brain yet. So it goes right through to their brain. I said, and it causes a massive inflammatory immune response. Remember how when you were little and they taught you about white blood cells, the macrophages, the real big guys, and they go and they, you know, they gobble up the bad guys? Yeah. Okay, well, when you have a massive inflammatory immune response, your blood gets really thick with all of these trying to fight the infection. And then some of the vaccine ingredients like aluminum, boy, that has no business in the human body. You need iron and manganese and copper and zinc, but you don't need aluminum, and it makes your blood sludgy. So now you've got all these extra white blood cells in there, and your blood is really thick and sludgy. And I said, you know how your little red blood cells are, right? They deliver oxygen? And they're like, yeah. And I said, well, your blood is so sludgy and thick. Think about this. In your brain, there are capillaries that are so tiny that the red blood cells have to travel down the capillary to deliver oxygen to the nerve at the end. And it's so tiny, they march down there one at a time. But when your blood is sludgy and thick and the white blood cells are blocking those tiny capillaries, the red blood cells never make it down to deliver oxygen. Do you know what it's called when a nerve dies in your brain from lack of oxygen? Then I will pause and I'll let them think about it and think about it and think about it. And that's when I switch to very serious and less dramatic, and I say, it's called a stroke. And they're like, a stroke? I'm like, yeah. You ever seen an 80-year-old person where half their face is paralyzed? They're like, yeah. I said, here, let me show you this. So I put my finger in front of my nose, and I put my index finger up, and I move it across my field of vision to my left, and my eyes saw what I said, and I'll point to both of my eyes in the corners, and I'll say, see how my eyes are in the corners? They're like, yeah. I said, go home and do this to somebody you know who's on the spectrum. I said, move your eye across. I said, now this eye stops in the middle, and I'll put my index finger in front of my right pupil, and then I'll kind of wave at my eye and say, see, their eye stops in the middle, and there's nothing wrong with the muscle. the nerve that controls that muscle has died. I said, it's no different than if you go into your wall and you cut the electrical cord between your switch and your light bulb. You can flip that switch on and off all day long, but the signal can't get there. And there's nothing wrong with the light switch. There's nothing wrong with the light bulb. They just can't talk anymore. So we are inducing strokes in the tiniest of babies.
Well, I
and that gets
to
them.
Say, to back up what you just said, which is a superb explanation that you're giving to total strangers. I'm amazed that you're able to get through that with strangers. I'm very impressed, let me tell you.
Well, when you've got some crazy woman talking to you, you don't make her stop. I've only had probably three people get people with me.
My mother had a stroke after the pneumonia vaccine.
Oh, no.
She was in a hospital. I was in California at the time, so I had my sisters around the clock with her. I said, never leave her side until the other one gets there. You don't go to the bathroom. You literally cannot leave her alone. We put on her chart that she had a bad reaction to a vaccine. We did everything we could to protect her. So when my sister took her out, into the lobby, she was in a wheelchair, and my sister ducked into the bathroom for 2 minutes, and a white coat came over and inoculated her. She took it away. She was in a wheelchair. And she has a stroke. And she has been in the hospital for a bladder infection. You don't have a stroke from a bladder infection.
No.
So she was inoculated with the pneumococcal vaccine. They did tell her what they were doing to her, but they didn't give her an option that she could literally leave, bodily move away from them. She wound up with a stroke. Now, I told everyone in the emergency room that. They gave each other a quick, knowing look and then scurried around like mad after that. And she's been babbling for 4 years ever since.
Mm. I am so sorry. That makes me want to throw up. That just hurts me so bad to hear that happened to your
family.
Mom.
Seventh member of my immediate family who is severely injured by vaccines. Seventh.
Oh, my goodness. Sally, who's going to take care of these people? Who is going to take care of these people?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Your kids. That's what I keep telling people. Will you stop fighting for the 0.8% of children in New York who have exemptions and aren't vaccinated because they cannot grow up and take care of the rest? You must fight for everybody, because everyone I know who's got an injured child had a choice, but they didn't know the truth. So until we can get these monsters to stop lying for profit, choice is irrelevant. Everyone I know with an injured child had a choice. They were lied to.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And that's one of the things that I try. I mean, just like you said, you were a regret parent. You had vaccinated your kids. And, you know, I've done lots and lots of things I regret. But two things that I did get right as a parent is I didn't circumcise my children, boys or girls. And I make sure I tell people that. All of my children are intact. I didn't circumcise my girls or my boys because culturally we're conditioned that it's okay for boys and not girls. So I want them to see that it's the equivalent. And I didn't vaccinate them. I made lots of other mistakes, but I did skip those two. Sally, I
you
want
didn't
to ask
make
you
the big mistakes. You didn't make the big mistakes. Those are the big
right.
mistakes. Because circumcised my son, and I had a pain in me when I heard him scream that I said to myself, if ever I have another child, under no circumstance will I ever do this to another child.
Right.
That just went through me like a knife. But anyway, I want to, in a few minutes, don't have a lot of time left here, and you made two excellent points that I'd like you to repeat and add anything else. You said two things were two major issues that involved wellness that are part of your platform. I want you to reiterate them, and I want you to state anything else that's part of your platform as you run for the U.S. Senate as a libertarian from Indiana. Lucy Brenton.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. So those within the sound of my voice that are voting Hoosiers or know somebody that's a Hoosier that can vote, please tell them to vote for me. I'm the only fiscal conservative in the United States Senate. raised here in Indiana, and I need to go to Washington, D.C. to protect your health rights. The very first top priority for me getting to the Senate is to repeal the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. Unless the manufacturers pay for their mistakes, they'll continue to use us as deep wells of profit. As long as there is no liability on a particular product, there is every incentive to continue to make the product regardless of the safety of that product. And to hold taxpayers as the financial underwriter of their mistakes, of course, is abhorrent. Secondarily, we must re-legalize marijuana now. We had marijuana in this country and hemp until about 1932. It was very actually racist reasons back in the early 30s that took marijuana away from us. And, of course, the reason that it's perpetuated is because of private prisons and the drug war keeps too many people employed. Well, I say let those good people go do other types of jobs and go do other things that would benefit society. It does not benefit us all at all to lock up nonviolent people for smoking a plant or for drinking its oil, especially when so many of those people are just trying to get relief from serious, serious medical issues. So those are my two major things. We have to maintain our personal freedom and our personal human rights, and that begins with who owns you and who owns your body. There's nothing more sacred than not getting injected with toxic substances.
I would like to also recommend along the same vein in terms of vaccines, the FDA has categorized vaccines as a health program and not a pharmaceutical product. So they do not,
yeah.
Vaccines do not undergo gold standard testing. And this designation, I believe, also alleviates when you see vaccines pushed, never see adverse reactions. So I believe
right.
that the designation, the it's not called designation, it's called this is a specific
yes.
word, but it's basically designation. The FDA has to change that. There are so many things that could be done, like removing Tylenol so that the autism rate is vastly lower in Cuba, where
yes.
they do not have Tylenol for children. So that's another thing that could transpire. But, Lucy Brenton, I really value your knowledge, your bravery, your tenacity, which is a compliment. This is a compliment. A lot of people think tenacity is it's what it's all about. You can't stay the course unless you've got tenacity. And so thank you for knowing enough and not vaccinating your children and not letting people ridicule you into it. You're just a stellar example of what motherhood should be. So God bless you.
You are too kind, and I'm pissed off for the rest of us too. So I'll stand up for you just like I stand up for mine.
Okay, I'll take it. Thank you, Lucy Brenton. We're about to get cut off, and I don't want you to be cut
Have
off
great night.
Ceremoniously. Please, everybody, check underneath the screen. Open the link for this program when you see it, and underneath the screen are two websites. One is lucyforsenate.com, and the other one is irefusetocomply.com. Lucy has a radio show on Mondays and Wednesdays from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on freedomizerradio.com. It's called I Refuse to Comply, and I am looking forward to listening to it every Monday and Wednesday from 6 to 9 Eastern.
Exactly. Hey, thanks so much, Sally. Have a great day.
Cheers.